Chapter 10. Styles has to admit that he's happy to let Ian handle things. He staggers along behind the shapeshifter, wondering what's wrong with him. Sleep deprivation, dehydration, starvation. How long has it been since they left Beacon Hills? It seems like it's been several days, at least. He hopes the others are all right. On top of that, every muscle aches, both from the aftermath of the plane crash and from what the woman in the lab coat had been doing to him. He's so exhausted that he can't quite bring himself to care about the fact that Ian just straight up murdered a woman in front of him. Or care about the fact that Ian's clearly intending to do it again. They've barely gotten 50 feet from the room he had been kept in when a guard rounds the corner. His gun comes up, but Ian almost immediately shifts forms into a shockingly enormous kind of troll. The bullets bounce right off his thick, leathery skin, and he removes the man's head from his shoulders with one swipe. Then he melts back into Styles' form and keeps walking as if nothing had ever happened, and there isn't blood splattered all over the hallway. "Why do you look like me?" Styles asks as they pick up the pace. "Did you meet someone that afraid of me?" "Well, sort of," Ian says. "I'm that afraid of you. You are, after all, the only person who's ever really come close to killing me. I didn't actually intend for it to happen, but I found myself taking on this form as sort of a default when I wasn't actively trying to be someone or something else." "Huh," Styles says. It doesn't make him feel great about Ian's loyalty. "Then why are you helping me?" Ian looks at him with a somewhat blank expression. Then he smiles. "Being afraid of you doesn't mean I don't like you, Styles. In my case, just the opposite. You're my favorite. This way now." Styles just shakes his head, because it's clear that there are some things he's never going to understand. Ian looks human, but he isn't. And he obviously operates on a completely different set of morals and personality traits from Styles. And at the moment, he's the one getting them out of this facility, so Styles isn't even sure he cares. The facility is big enough that it could easily house the several dozen creatures that Ian had mentioned. They have to walk for several minutes through narrow, brightly lit hallways. Two more guards are encountered and just as quickly slaughtered. "Normally I don't go for quick kills," Ian says, taking a set of keys off the body of a guard. "Or even kills at all. I mean, you can't be afraid if you're dead. But I figure we really don't want anyone to spread a system-wide alarm." "Yeah," Styles agrees. He's feeling a little numb, which he supposes is a good thing, considering the alternative. Watching Ian kill a few people who had helped torture him isn't making that big of an impression on him. "Here," Ian says, ripping a door off its hinges and showing Styles down a narrow corridor. "All the cells are mountain ash," he says, unlocking the first door, "but opening the door will break the circle, so they should be able to get out all right." "Great," Styles says. The first door swings open and Boyd is standing there, anxiously, having heard the noise. He grabs Styles in a hug the instant the door is out of the way. "Man, am I glad to see you," he says. "No shit," Styles says, hugging back tightly. The next cell has Lydia, then Erica, then Danny. Styles' hands are shaking as he clings to them, terrified that Derek will be somewhere else, that they won't be able to find him. But the last door opens to reveal his Lupa, who immediately bursts out of the cell and grabs him. Ian stands in the doorway to the corridor, looking mellow and amused, occasionally glancing over his shoulder. Erica spots him first. "Styles, what the fuck?" she blurts out, and the other pack members similarly gape at the Styles lookalike. "Oh, yeah," Styles says. "For those of you who haven't met him before, this is Ian. He's a shapeshifter. Lately he's been using my face because, I don't know, he's weird and has a crush on me. Ian, this is Lydia, Boyd, and Danny. You've met Erica and Derek." "Indeed I have," Ian says, with a smirk. The last time he had seen Derek, the werewolf had punched him in the face. But Ian doesn't seem to be harboring any hard feelings. "Since he came from this facility, I guess Allison and the others called him up to come get us," Styles says. I'll give you the details once we're out of here. Anyway, let him handle the guards. He's better equipped for it.
Do you know the way out of here?
Boyd asks. Ian shrugs. No, but we'll find it. Derek rolls his eyes, then turns to Stiles and says quietly,
Hey, you seem tired. Do you need help?
It's a very tactful way to describe how Stiles knows he looks. He's freaked out and exhausted, and he knows they can all tell he was screaming and crying. He'd rather lie down for about a decade, but obviously that won't be happening until they get out of here.
Yeah,
he says, and just leans against Derek. Carry me?
Okay.
Derek scoops Stiles up in a reverse piggyback, without waiting for further input. Stiles rests his cheek against Derek's shoulder and just holds on, letting Derek's scent and the feeling of his heartbeat bring some calm back to him. Fortunately for them, the building isn't constructed like a maze. There's no reason for it to be. It's a prison, not a casino. The people who work here have to be able to get in and out on a daily basis. Less fortunately, the first exit they find takes them out onto the side of a mountain. There's a concrete platform that's about 10 feet wide, and then a narrow staircase leading down. Stiles looks down over Derek's shoulder and sees a parking lot down below them.
They like their employees to get their exercise, I guess,
Boyd says. He puts one foot on the first stair and nearly slips.
Shit, kind of icy.
It's cold, too. They're definitely up in the mountains, and the wind is whipping at all of them. Still, if they can get down, maybe they can hotwire a car or something like that. Stiles really doesn't want to have to wander around the forest when whoever runs the place is going to be looking for them. It's a miracle if any of the people Ian killed haven't been found already.
Maybe there's another exit somewhere?
Erica asks. Lydia is looking around.
Yes, over there,
she says, pointing. The building is shaped like an H, and it seems to be built into the side of the mountain. That one has a loading dock and then a road down.
Okay. Let's head that way,
Derek agrees. But as soon as they get inside, he stiffens.
Someone's coming,
he says, and a moment later, Stiles hears what the werewolf heard, the steady click-clack of high-heeled shoes approaching them. Ian? He adds, propelling the shapeshifter in front of them. But Ian is still and surprised, eyes going minutely wide. He shakes his head decisively and says, No, we can't get past her. Go! Go! He pushes Erica and then Lydia back out onto the balcony. What? Why can't we? Stiles starts. Go! Jump! Ian shouts, and then he does a nosedive off the balcony himself. Oh, shit! Stiles says, as Derek jumps after him. He closes his eyes tightly, but then hits a soft surface only a moment later. Feathers. He opens his eyes and finds that he's on the back of some enormous bird. The others land badly, and it's a hasty scramble to make sure everyone stays on Ian's back. Erica winds up clutched in the bird's talons, shrieking up a storm. Several beats of Ian's powerful wings take them down the side of the mountain, and Stiles is shaking uncontrollably by the time they touch down in a little clearing.
Oh, what the f-?
He stammers, as Derek pulls him into a hug, hands rubbing up and down his back in an attempt to warm him up. The bird dissolves into a shower of dust and black feathers, and then Stiles-shaped Ian is standing there again. He's a little paler than before.
I couldn't fight her, he says. She wasn't afraid of anything.
Stiles shudders and clings to Derek. Maybe you just couldn't...
No, you're not understanding the import of this,
Ian says, and he looks a little shaken himself. Everyone is afraid of something. Everyone. Even if it's only the lingering fear of the dark from when they were a child. That's practically a generic, congenital fear. Everyone is afraid of something. And I can always tell. As soon as I feel their presence, hear or see them, as soon as I know they exist, I know what they fear. And that person who was approaching us feared nothing.
What does that mean?
Boyd asks quietly, helping Erica up. I've only ever met one person like that before, Ian says. And like this time, I got away from him as soon as I could.
only one type of person has no fear, and that's a genuine psychopath. Someone who truly believes that they are the center of the universe, that they are stronger, smarter, better than everyone and everything else. Someone who believes that they are invincible. It's the most dangerous person there is. Styles looks back up the mountain and says, I wonder if it was the mastermind. It fits. The sort of person who likes to play games, to hurt others just for fun, just to see what they'll do. If it was, then it's a woman, Lydia says. No man's shoes make that sort of noise. Well, if we meet her again, I'll recognize her, Ian says. Styles shakes his head. He's not about to climb back up the mountain to find out whether or not they're right. He needs rest. He needs food. He needs to stop for a little while. Come on, guys, he says. We've gone from being in the middle of the Utah desert to the middle of the Wyoming wilderness. It sucks either way, so let's get moving. It would have been nice if they had a phone so they could see if they had service, but none of them have any of their stuff, and Ian doesn't have a phone of his own. Not the sort of thing I need, he says with a shrug. Do you check your email at a public library or what? Danny asks him. Yes, usually. Why? Derek snorts with laughter. Sometimes it takes supernatural creatures a while to catch up on technology, he says, especially if they're old. You should just be glad I know what email is, Ian says, or you'd still be rotting inside that prison. Fair enough, Styles says. He stumbles a little, and Derek gets him by the elbow. You're sure you're okay to walk? The werewolf asks. Yeah, I'm just tired, Styles says. Derek stops walking and assesses him for a minute, then says, If it were anyone else, you'd be saying, Swallow your pride, we'll make better time if someone carries you. Styles makes a face at him, then says, Fine, just alternate, okay? I don't want to be too much of a burden. Okay, Derek says, thoughtfully not commenting. He lets Styles ride regular piggyback this time, so he can face forward, and starts walking again. Once he's a little bit ahead of the others and they have some semblance of privacy, he says quietly, Really, though, you look worse than tired. You weren't with the rest of us. Are you all right? Styles leans against him, pressing his chin into Derek's shoulder. They did some experiments on me. Hurt me. He can feel more than hear Derek let out a low growl. Because I'm the human alpha, and nobody really understands what that means. I don't want to talk about it, okay? Physically, I think I'm all right, and emotionally, I'll recover. I just need to... He swallows the hysteria down and evens out his voice. I want my dad and my pack, and I just want to go home, you know? Yeah, Derek says. He adjusts Styles a little and says, Then let's get you home. It's not as bad as their trek through the desert. It's chilly, but the movement keeps them all warm. The terrain is more difficult. Rocky forests, in places slippery or dense. Most of them stay in their wolf forms, with the exception of Ian and whoever is carrying Styles, which they do about an hour at a time. They can tell time, since several of them still have their watches, but they don't really know where they're going. The forest is too dense to get a good look at the sun, but even if they knew which direction they were going, they have no real idea which direction they should be going. Styles wants to head north, to get them the hell off Nazario territory, but he has no real idea how far they are from Montana, or whether or not they could get there. Ian takes the lead, saying he'll get them back to civilization. But Styles doesn't know how long that will take. Gradually, he nods off, face resting against Lydia's shoulder. Spending the night in the Wyoming wilderness is not an experience that Styles thinks he's going to remember fondly. He's definitely had worse nights, but it's cold and eerily quiet. It's completely dark, too. The wood is all too wet to start a fire, and the moon is new. Even the desert wasn't quite so dark. Ever since his 2 days in Peter's car, Stiles has slept with a nightlight and a source of white noise. He doesn't even care if he's just pandering to himself. It's the only way he can sleep. Now he doesn't have either of those two things, and every tiny forest noise sends his heart into his mouth. He dozes, drifts, has bad dreams. Normally he would get up and start baking or even plug himself full of caffeine and just stay up, but neither of those things are options now. He spends a lot of time shifting restlessly and staring at the dark sky. As soon as there's a hint of light, he has everybody up. He wants to get moving. Erica was up on watch, and she helps him get the others up. She frowns down at Ian's sleeping form, wearing Stiles' face. Stiles thinks she's going to say something about Ian's general lack of trustworthiness, or creepiness, or something along those lines. Instead, she suddenly groans and says, "I'm so horny." And Stiles laughs so hard that his ribs ache. It feels good to laugh. "I feel good enough to walk," he says when Stiles asks, and the werewolf gives him the side eye. "At least for now. Ask me again in a couple hours."
"Okay," Derek says.
More than anything, it's hunger that's bothering Stiles now. They've got water, in the source of a few patches of snow, and the pain of the experiments is fading to a certain degree. He's used to sleep deprivation, but his stomach has wrapped itself around his spine in search of nutrients. He finds himself fantasizing about cheeseburgers and spaghetti and his grandmother's borscht as they trudge through the forest. They walk all morning, trudging over uneven ground, and he has to stop and let the others carry him twice. It's a few hours into the afternoon when Ian says, "Ah, here we are." And Stiles stumbles up beside him to see a road. An honest-to-God paved road. The asphalt slick with the light rain that's been falling. It's only two lanes, but it looks well-traveled enough. He nearly throws himself to the ground to start kissing the pavement. The others are hastily shifting back into human forms and throwing their clothes on.
"Which way?" Derek asks.
Ian shrugs. "Where are we trying to go?" "North," Stiles says. "If only we had a cork and a magnet," Lydia grumbles. "Then I could make a compass." But she glances up at the sun and says, "This looks like more of an east-west road."
"Okay, then."
West will take them into Stella Jones territory, which is arguably even worse than Nazario territory. "East," he decides, and they start walking. Two cars pass, one going in each direction. Stiles waves at them, but they go past without stopping, probably intimidated by the large group of grubby teenagers. He's contemplating throwing himself in the road in front of the next one, but then he sees the blessed bubble lights on the top. The police car pulls over as soon as it sees them. "You really shouldn't hike on this road," the officer is saying as he gets out of the car. Stiles glances at the side and sees that it's Wyoming State Police. "Hey, officer, I'm so glad to see you," Stiles says, "because we're incredibly lost and we've been hiking for days because our stupid plane crashed." He sees the look of surprise and some skepticism on the man's face and says, "My dad is a police officer, sheriff of Beacon Hills County in California. You should be able to verify it. We were on a chartered flight and the engine failed. Oh, my name's Stiles Stilinski. My dad's name is Tom Stilinski."
"Hang on," the officer says, and heads back to his car.
He spends a minute on his radio, then gets back out.
"Okay, they're sending out someone to pick you kids up," he says, and Stiles starts humming the Hallelujah chorus. "You look pretty banged up. Do you want to call your dad? You can use my phone if you want."
"Yes! Oh my God, thank you so much," Stiles says, accepting the cell phone from the officer. He wonders how they're going to get their things back from the facility in Wyoming. "Do we even have coverage here? I kept trying mine, but then the battery finally died, and we were still in a no-service area."
"It can be spotty," the man agrees, "but we're close enough to Cody that we can usually get a signal. If not, you can call when we get you to the hospital."
Thanks. Styles sees that the phone has two bars and dials. He holds his breath through the moment of silence, and then it rings. He gives everyone a thumbs up, and his father picks up a moment later. Hey, Dad, it's me, he says. Styles, where the hell are you? Sheriff Stilinski demands. Apparently somewhere near Cody, Wyoming, Styles says. Wherever that is. The plane went down. I don't know if you knew that, or if you just knew we hadn't gotten to Illinois. They found the wreckage in Utah, Tom says. Jesus, it's good to hear your voice. Hang on. Allison? Back into the receiver, he says. She's been helping me go through. Hey, Allison, it's Styles. Styles! Allison clamors in the background. Is everyone okay? Yeah, everyone's fine. We've got some bruises and scratches, and I would literally beg for a cheeseburger. But overall, we seem to have pulled through. We've been walking for fucking ever, and hang on, I think our ride is here. He looks up as an ambulance pulls up and two EMTs hop out. Paramedics, they're gonna wanna check me out. Look, Dad, if you can wire me some money or something, I'll just rent a car and drive home. No way am I getting back on a plane. No kidding, Tom says. A little more hesitantly, he says. I take it you don't have any of your stuff, probably for reasons you don't want to say out loud in front of people not in the know. Got it in one, Styles says. Listen, I'll call you later. They're taking us to the hospital. We can work out the details later. Is everyone on your end okay? Anything I need to know? Nothing that can't wait, Tom says. You go get your cheeseburger. His voice gets momentarily rough. God, I'm glad you're okay. Call me back as soon as you can. Will do. Thanks, Dad. Love you, he adds, and then hangs up. Derek immediately has him by the elbow and gets him sitting down on the back of the ambulance. The EMTs shine a flashlight in his eyes and check out some of his bruises before they start ushering everyone into the ambulance as a second one pulls up. Styles hates the idea of having to split up, even for a short ride, but there's nothing he can do about it. Fortunately, everyone gets to the hospital unscathed. Also fortunately, the doctors don't know the extent of the crash. When one of them remarks, I'm amazed you aren't hurt worse, Styles replies with, well, it was more of an unplanned landing than an actual crash, and tells them that it wasn't as rough as it could have been. They haven't seen the wreckage, so they take his word for it. He, of course, has the worst bruises. Even the werewolves are dehydrated, so everyone gets an IV. Ian has been hanging around in the background as Styles' brother. Styles always wanted an identical twin, and he seems baffled by the concept, but doesn't object. When I'm in this form, I'm as human as can be, he explains, when there isn't anyone in earshot. That's why you were able to beat the crap out of me that one time. I was only as strong as a human woman. The IV has a glucose strip as well as saline, since they're half-starved, and Styles starts to feel better pretty much immediately. The officer who picked them up shows up with some pizza and wins the position of Styles' current favorite person in the universe. Some guy from the FAA is going to come ask you some questions, he says before leaving. The guy does show up, but doesn't have many questions. It's obvious that he's familiar with the supernatural world and knows exactly who Styles is. He says that he's talked with Sheriff Stilinski and that he's going to make sure that everything that needs to get swept underneath a rug ends up there. Styles thanks him and offers him a slice of pizza, which he declines, amused. After that, Styles dozes for a little while, thinking about how they're going to get home, how they're going to get their things back. He doesn't even know how wiring money works. It's just not the sort of thing he's worried about, given that it's 2014. A nurse comes in, again, to look at the amount of pizza they've demolished, with an impressed expression, then says, Styles, your father is on the phone. Oh, cool, Styles says. Thanks. He gets up and trots after her. She hands him the phone at the nurse's station. Hey, Dad. Hey, kiddo, Tom says. We've been talking to some people, and we're sending someone to pick you up. Vanessa Nazario. You remember hearing Allison talk about her? Yeah, the great aunt who doesn't suck, Styles says. Okay. She was heading your direction anyway because she had agreed to go to their prison and see if you were there. I'm guessing maybe you boosted yourselves out a little ahead of schedule?
Pretty much, yeah,
Stiles says. Good, Tom says. She'll be there in about an hour. The hospital is going to keep you until then. Vanessa's going to drive you part way. She's got a place in southern Wyoming where you guys can stay the night. And then she'll give you some money that Victoria is going to send to her, so you can get yourself a car to drive back to California. Does that all sound workable?
Yeah,
sounds good, Stiles says. It's not too late in the day, but he's exhausted. And now that he's allowing himself to feel it, it's bad. Everyone seems to agree that Vanessa is an okay person. If she's willing to put them up for the night, he'll go with it.
Hey, how's everyone?
Tom knows what he's really asking. Jake and Phil are fine. They've been staying with me and Melissa. Chris is shaky emotionally, but he's doing about as well as he could be, and a lot better than Deaton had expected. Everyone in your pack is fine. Scott actually went with Deaton. They were in Utah trying to track you guys down using magic. But I've gotten in touch with them, and they'll be back before you.
Okay, Stiles says, relaxing. Okay, great. I guess I'll see you in a couple days, then.
Vanessa's going to try to get your stuff back from the facility, but she didn't make any promises, Tom says. But she said that she'd get you a new phone so you wouldn't be out of contact during your drive home.
Sounds good, Stiles says, wondering exactly what Victoria Argent had said to her aunt to get her in such a conciliatory mood.
You take care, kiddo. See you soon.
Love you, bye,
Stiles agrees. Waits until his father echoes it, and then hangs up. He thanks the nurse and shuffles back to the hospital bed. It's not the comfiest of perches, and God, he wishes Derek could shift so he could have a service dog to cuddle with. But he falls asleep anyway. When he wakes up, it looks like about an hour has passed, and the nurse is back. Ms. Nazario is here to pick you up, she says, and starts disconnecting their IVs and having them sign paperwork. When they get outside, there's an older woman standing there, talking to a sheriff's deputy. He's frowning a little, but nodding at something that she's saying. Stiles' first impression of Vanessa Nazario is that she's too fit to be called elderly, even though he knows she's in her 70s. She's standing next to a dark gray pickup truck that's got mud and salt residue splattered on it in various places. The deputy glances at them, then says, "You take care now," directed both at them and at Vanessa, and turns back towards the hospital. Stiles is about to ask how they're all going to fit in the truck. He supposes they can ride in the back, although he's fairly sure that breaks several laws, when Lydia goes stiff beside him.
"You are not Vanessa," she says.
Everyone looks between her and the woman, and she gives a rough nod. "Aria Nazario," she says, a note of smug pleasure in her voice. "Vanessa couldn't make it. Get in the truck, kids. We're going for a ride." Stiles hesitates. He glances back towards the hospital, wondering if they could head back inside, and sees the deputy standing in front of the door. He's stone-faced, hand resting on the butt of his gun in its holster. "We Nazarios have a lot of friends up here," Aria says, seeing where Stiles is looking. "Both in the know and out of it. You'd best get in the truck if you know what's good for you." Stiles studies her, musters up what he knows about her and what he knows about small-town life, and decides she's right. She could shoot him right now and drive away, and everyone would call it some sort of tragic accident, a misfire. He's not sure what Aria intends for them, but he is sure that going with her is their best option. "You heard the lady," he says to the others. Derek gives him a glance as if to ask if he's sure. But the others are already climbing into the bed of the truck. Stiles moves to follow them, but Aria has his elbow and is pressing a gun to his ribs. "Not you," she says. "You ride in the cab with me." It's a sensible move. If they all rode in the bed of the truck, they could wait until they were further away and jump out and trust their werewolf healing to protect them. But if she keeps Stiles in the cab, none of the wolves are going anywhere.